Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. I'm looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It is about that time. The most entertaining 60 minutes of your day has just begun right here live on the campus of Michigan State University inside of Studio West. You are now locked into WKAR's current sports right here on WKAR AM 870, 105.1 FM. That's right. I am your host, Al Martin, and I hope to entertain, enlighten, and inform you all throughout this hour of current sports. So what are we talking about, you ask? Well, the Sweet 16 officially gets underway for the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament starting tonight. And guess what? No, not Michigan State, but the team down the road out in Ann Arbor, Michigan, the Michigan Men's Basketball Squad, led by John Beilein, will play Texas A&M for a chance at the Elite Eight. We will preview, briefly, the Michigan and Texas A&M matchup, what to look for, what time that game starts. You'll get all that information in just a moment. And we have not one, not two, but three interviews to bring to you all. Around 1:15, I will be chatting with Ronald Fisher, Michigan State professor in the Department of Economics. Ronald is going to help us dive into this week's story centered on Eastern Michigan University Athletics. EMU, if you have not heard, has decided to cut four sports in order to combat this budget deficit that they are currently facing. Ronald will help us dive into the numbers and talk about why this move needed to be made and possibly whether or not we will see Eastern Michigan cut college football. Could that be down the pike? We'll talk with Ronald Fisher. You don't want to miss that conversation. Also, around 1:30, we will then welcome to current sports my dear friend, Ira Childress, Okemos High School Athletic Director. Ira will give us a preview of spring sports for Okemos High School. We'll also pick Ira's brain about budget cuts when it comes to collegiate athletics. We'll dive into the whole should college athletes be paid conversation. He will also talk about the new head coach of the Okemos High School football team, Mike Crum, who is taking over for Jack Wallace, and just the innovative and different ideas that Ira tries to bring to the forefront of high school athletics at Okemos. All of that and so much more. It should be a fun chat with Ira Childress. And then we will invite to the show a feature done by our very own Scott Pohl, WKAR news reporter, as Scott got a chance to talk with former Michigan sports reporter for the Detroit Free Press. Also, he actually began his career with the Lansing State Journal. But Keith Gave has a book coming out centered on the Russian Five. Trust me, you don't want to miss this feature. It's so good, actually, that we're going to be running two parts of it. You'll hear part one on the back end of the show, and we'll play part two for you tomorrow. But trust me, you don't want to miss this interview. It's compelling on so many different levels. And as you see, our plate runneth over on this Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. If you would like to join the fun, you know there are multiple ways in which you can do so. You can pick up that phone and simply dial 517-355-9200. WKAR. Again, that's 517-355-9527. Go to our Facebook page where we have the live stream up and running at facebook.com/WKAR News, and even tweet me at Al Martin. WKAR is my official Twitter handle, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, you know, I noted on yesterday's Current Sports how it is a bit of a dreary time around this time of the year for all of you local hoop fans, as we don't have a local high school boys basketball team competing for a state championship this weekend. And again, we've been talking throughout the week about Michigan State men's basketball falling to Syracuse in round two of the NC2A tourney. However, there is one team that is still dancing in a tournament. I want to show some love to Susie Merchant and the Michigan State women's basketball team. After a pair of home wins, the Michigan State women's hoop squad now hits the road tonight to take on South Dakota. That will be an 8 p.m. tip time in the third round of the Women's National Invitational Tournament. South Dakota comes into the third round battle with an impressive 28-6 overall record and a perfect 14-0 mark in the Summit League. The Coyotes are solid at home with a 16-1 record this season. Rebounding has been the key to the Spartans' success. MSU was 11-5 when getting over 40 boards in a game. In a close battle, Shea Colley's layup with less than 2 seconds left lifted the Spartans over Toledo in the second round of the Women's National Invitational Tournament. 68-66 was the final on Monday night at the Breslin Center. This is the first ever meeting between Michigan State and South Dakota. Again, tip time set for 8 p.m. tonight, third round action of the WNIT. Michigan State baseball had a no-hitter going for 6 2/3 innings of work against Central Michigan University, but the visiting Chips broke through with 2 late hits, 1 a 2-run single, and MSU was clipped by CMU 3-1 Wednesday afternoon at Chili McLane Stadium at Cobbs Field. The Spartans slid to 6-13 on the season, while the Chips improved to 5-15-1. Wednesday's loss actually snapped a 2-game win streak for Michigan State in the series with CMU, but the Spartans have won 5 of the last 7 meetings, while the Chips now lead the all-time series 68-62. Now, Michigan State will tangle with its second in-state foe of the week and kick off Big Ten Conference play, taking on in-state rival Michigan in split home-away series to open league play. MSU will play in a squared out in Ann Arbor on Friday at 4 p.m. before returning home to host the Wolverines on Saturday. That will be a 1:05 p.m. first pitch at McLane Stadium. The teams will then return to Ann Arbor for the series finale on Sunday at 1 p.m. And as I just noted, again, folks, there are 4 games that will open up Sweet 16 action in the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. Starting off the action, you can catch Sister Jean and the Loyola Chicago men's basketball squad, the 11 seed, taking on Nevada at 7:07 p.m. And also about 30 minutes after that, the Michigan Wolverines will tangle against the Texas A&M Aggies, a 7 seed versus Michigan, the 3 seed. That game will tip off at 7:37 p.m. Then later on tonight, you can catch number 9, Kansas State against number 5, Kentucky at 9:37 p.m. And then about 10 p.m., Florida State and Gonzaga will tip off, again, around 10 p.m., Florida State being a 9 seed, Gonzaga being a 4 seed. So out of the four games and eight teams that will be playing tonight, Michigan is the highest seeded team. Interesting stuff. We'll preview Michigan and Texas A&M in just a moment. The Detroit Pistons will bring a two-game winning streak into the Toyota Center on Thursday today to try and stay alive in the Eastern Conference playoff race as they visit the streaking Houston Rockets, who have been playing so good as of late, really all season. The Rockets are 57-14, the Pistons' heavy road underdogs in this one. The Pistons trail the Milwaukee Bucks by 5 games for the last playoff spot in the NBA's Eastern Conference, while the Houston Rockets have won 6 straight contests and lead the West by 4 games. Detroit needs to finish the regular season strong in order to make the postseason. A playoff spot seems very unlikely, but the Pistons play 6 of their final 10 regular season games at home following Thursday's game in Houston. A win over the Rockets would give them a lot of confidence down the stretch. The Rockets have only lost 1 game since January 26th, led by James Harden. Houston just swept a 3-game road trip, capped by a 115-111 dub on Tuesday against the Portland Trailblazers, who had won 13 in a row. James Harden, he totaled 42 points, 7 assists, and 6 boards versus the Blazers, and he leads the NBA with 31.2 points per game. If I had a vote in the NBA's MVP race, without a doubt, James Harden would be leading that conversation with LeBron James, though, he's been playing fantastic, hasn't he? He's just been putting the Cleveland Cavaliers on his back. He had a monster of a game last night in a win against the Toronto Raptors. And I believe, you know what? I want you to look this up, Ian. I heard a crazy stat this morning. Now, when I woke up this morning and wiping the crust out of my eyes, I start listening to so many different sports talk shows out there. But I heard a crazy stat. I believe LeBron James had a triple-double last night. But I believe it's the first time that somebody has had a triple-double since they started tracking the turnover stat. It's the first time that someone has had a triple-double while also having 0 turnovers. Is that right?
That is correct.
I couldn't believe it. I thought I was dreaming. I woke up and I heard that said. I'm saying, no, that can't be right. That's crazy. LeBron James is playing on another level. So he's the first man in NBA history to have a triple-double while having
a double-double out.
Oh, he had a double-double. Okay, yes, so sir. It wasn't a triple-double. It was a double-double. So first man to have a double-double while also having 0 turnovers. Is that the stat?
First person to have 30 points, over 15 assists, and 0 turnovers.
Ah, that's
since,
what it was.
Since 77-78 when
there
they started
go.
Tracking that.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yes, sir,
okay,
no problem.
Okay, but still, that's amazing. LeBron James, my goodness. My goodness. Quick question. I've heard this topic debated. We've talked about this topic many times here on Current Sports. Is there anything in your eyes, Ian Hawley, not even knowing where you fall in this conversation, is there anything that LeBron James can do to catch who I consider to be the greatest of all time in Michael Jordan?
Win more championships than him. Plain and simple.
That's the only thing he had. So if he gets more than 6.
Plain and simple, yeah. That's really the only thing he has left. He's got a ton of finals MVPs, just like Michael Jordan. I mean, his record is not going to be the same as Jordan's because Jordan never lost a final series. But if he passes him in championships, I mean, what more can you really want from the guy?
But
what more
not,
can you say
right.
As far as LeBron versus MJ?
You're not putting him past MJ right now, though.
No.
Same
I mean,
here.
He's a great team player, but he doesn't pass MJ in my eyes. Not yet, at least.
A lot of people forget, too. Folks, Michael Jordan chose not to win 8. People forget about those 2 years when he played baseball. I don't even know what he was doing. He, quote-unquote, played baseball. He chose not to win 2 more. Okay, folks? But, yeah, MJ's still the GOAT, but you can't deny. I'm not trying to take anything away from LeBron. He is playing insane right now. It's remarkable what he's doing. All right, the Detroit Red Wings will be seeking back-to-back victories for the first time in nearly a month tonight when the Washington Capitals visit Little Caesars Arena. If they succeed, they will stave off playoff elimination, but only temporarily. The Wings are on the brink of elimination, and a loss in any fashion, regulation, overtime, or shootout will knock them out of the postseason for the 2nd year in a row. The Winged Wheel, sitting at 27-35-11, haven't won consecutive games since February 24th and 25th. Just sad. The Detroit Tigers made a significant round of cuts,
this morning to trim the roster to 28. The Tigers optioned left-handed pitchers Chad Bell and Blaine Hardy to Triple-A Toledo. The Tigers also reassigned six players to minor league camp, catchers Derek Norris and Jared Saltalamacchia, infielders Pete Kuzma, as well as Ronnie Rodriguez, and outfielders Jim Aducci and Chad Huffman. And moving on from that story, the Detroit Lions feel one of their biggest needs by signing defensive tackle Sylvester Williams to a one-year deal. The 29-year-old Williams, who helps the Lions replace Elodie Nada, likely would slide into a starting role and be an interior line rotation with A'shaun Robinson and Akeem Spence, both who started at a defensive tackle after Nada was lost for the season. Now, with Nada out of the lineup, Detroit's run defense really, really suffered. And also, Anfernee Simmons will forego his collegiate eligibility and declare for the 2018 NBA draft. He informed that news to ESPN. Simmons, a top 10 high school recruit, according to the ESPN 100, is eligible for the 2018 draft as a postgraduate, being 1 year removed from his high school graduation and turning 19 in June, thus satisfying the NBA requirements. Now, he spent his fifth year of high school at IMG Academy out in Florida and was recently named to the prestigious Nike Hoop Summit and Jordan Brand Classic event. So essentially, Anfernee Simmons is going from high school to the NBA. Interesting stuff there. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's keep it pushing.
They're very talented. They're skilled. They pass the ball well. They're obviously a tremendous offensive rebounding team. The 12 offensive rebounds a game they're getting is as high a number as we've seen this year. The rebounding game, I don't know if I'm different on it, but we are really consumed with how many offensive rebounds we can keep a team from getting. Rebounds don't win the game. Offensive rebounds win games. And so that concerns us a great deal. They got really good guard play and change defenses. They play, a lot of teams we've been playing 100% man. They play a really good zone defense as well, and they have a lot of talent. They got a terrific coach.
All right, head coach John Beilein discussing and previewing his team's matchup, the Michigan Wolverines, taking on Texas A&M. Again, tip time for that game, a trip to the Elite Eight on the line. Tip time for that game, slated for 7:37 p.m. Should be an interesting game. As many of you know, when it comes to my main bracket, I do have the Michigan Wolverines going to at least the Final Four. And out of the four-game slate tonight, Michigan is the highest-seeded team that will be taking the hardwood tonight. Going to be an interesting matchup on many levels, though, because this is a really tough Aggies team. 7-seed that got past Providence and number 2-seed North Carolina last week in Charlotte. running the Tar Heels really out of the gym in a surprising upset on Sunday. All five starters for the Aggies average in double figure scoring. Sophomore forward Robert Williams, keep an eye on him. He's 6'10". He has a 7'5" wingspan. Dude has stretch. Let's put it that way, all right? He's projected, actually, as a lottery pick as well in June's NBA draft. But Robert Williams, keep an eye on that name. And as you just heard from John Beilein, he is concerned right now with rebounding with his team, especially when you have Robert Williams in there. They have another big man as well down there who really can crash the boards and create some problems. But this is going to be a good game. This is a good game tonight. Michigan has reached 30 wins. The Wolverines sit at 30-7 right now. Michigan has reached 30 wins three times previously in program history. And if history has any indication as to how this season will finish out for the Wolverines, well, Wolverines fans out there should be smiling a bit, because the three previous times that Michigan has reached the 30-win mark happened in 2013, 1993, and 1989. Those years might ring a bell, because the Wolverines reached the national championship each time, winning its lone title back in 1989. Interesting stuff there. I got the Wolverines winning tonight. Ian, real quick before we get to our first guest, what do you think happens tonight with the Wolverines and the Aggies?
It depends on which Michigan team shows up, man. If it's the team we've seen from last weekend, I think Texas A&M is going to beat them by 10 points. But I think if the Michigan team that played Michigan State earlier on in the season and won the Big Ten tournament shows up, they're going to steamroll Texas A&M. So it's going to be one-sided, but it just depends on which Michigan team shows up.
Agreed. And I think Mo Wagner is going to finally get out of the funk that he is in right now.
Man, I hope so.
Those first two games that we saw, to start the NCAA tourney, he was nowhere to be found. So I think he has a good game tonight. I think he finally breaks out of his shell and has a good game. I'm going with the Wolverines to win tonight. What do you think? If you had to give a prediction.
I pick Michigan.
You're going with Michigan as well. All right, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports, because we started this conversation yesterday to close out the show. It's an important one. Now, it was reported this week that Eastern Michigan University would be axing four sports programs at the end of the year due to steep budget shortfalls. Those sports are softball, men's swimming and diving, women's tennis, and wrestling. Now, EMU will have 17 sports. That will be down from 21, which actually led the Mid-American Conference. 7 men's sports and 10 women's sports. In total, 58 male student athletes and 25 female student athletes will be affected, and the move is expected to save around $2.4 million. EMU is eliminating other positions as well in order to make up a projected deficit of $4.5 million to $5.5 million for the 2018 fiscal year. 42 other positions are being eliminated, and 17 layoffs are being made. And it's a bit controversial, because as this story has been documented 2 years ago by HBO's Real Sports, a lot of the budget deficit has to do with the college football program. It really does. A program that isn't elite by any means, and many people feel like it's a waste of money. But right now, to kind of dive into the numbers and how something like this happens to a mid-major university like EMU, I want to welcome to the show right now Ronald Fisher, Michigan State professor in the Department of Economics, and also he teaches a course entitled Social Science of Sports. Ronald, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks very much. Happy to be here.
I first off want to start, Ronald, by kind of diving into how something like this can happen to a mid-major like Eastern Michigan. How does a university like EMU get in this kind of financial duress?
Well, it's not unusual. One of the misperceptions about college sports is that college sports programs make money. And in fact, most college sports programs lose money. In the football bowl subdivision, the top level, there were, I think, 128, 130 teams, something like that. In the most recent year that the NCAA has data, only 24 of those athletics departments generated enough revenue to cover their costs. All the rest of them, the other 100-plus athletic programs in the Football Bowl subdivision, lost money. So the situation for Eastern, where the athletics department is in deficit and they're trying to figure out how do they either reduce costs or generate more revenue, this is not unusual. It's actually more common. It is the common case, in fact. So I think people sometimes just have a misperception. You know, if you follow Michigan State or the University of Michigan, programs that are really large, that generate a lot of revenue, that do make money, you somehow think that's the norm, but that's not at all the typical example in college sports.
So with that being said, Ronald, seeing as though there is such a small percentage of schools out there who actually make money off of a sport like college football, why do so many universities try to play that game then in the first place?
Well, obviously they think having the issue really is, why do you want to have an athletics program? And the idea of having an athletics program is not just to make money. It's not just to entertain fans. Presumably, the universities believe there's some value to the students who are participating in these sports, that there's some educational value. And so they're willing to spend money to continue to have a program that they think is valuable. Mm-hmm. So, again, in the F Football Bowl subdivision, if you think of all of those schools, 45%, forget the athletics departments overall, almost half of the football program, as you said, lose money, can't cover their costs. And that's certainly true at a place like Eastern, where their number of tickets sold is small, ticket prices are low, they don't have a lot of television money. But they think either that football is bringing some value to the university overall, or that there's value, educational value, to the student athlete to participate. You can't judge it just in terms of dollars generated, I think.
Ronald, the allocation of money for athletics, how much on average is a mid-major school like EMU allotted to work with on an annual basis?
Well, it's going to vary quite a bit what their budget is. Mm-hmm. If you think of these 128 schools in the Football Bowl subdivision, the ones in the middle are spending about $60 to $65 million a year. Mm-hmm. So Eastern would be below that, because they're going to be less than the middle of one of those schools. But as you said, it's a lot of money. How do you fund it? Where do you get the revenue? How much does the university want to subsidize this kind of activity, because it can't cover its costs overall? Places like Michigan State and Michigan are fortunate that we have athletics programs that can cover their costs, that are large enough. But that's really rare.
So if you could give us a number in comparison to that of a, you know, a major conference university like here at Michigan State and even Michigan, what does that number look like for MSU?
The budget at Michigan State is $100 million or $100 million plus, something like that. The top one, I think the largest one now is Ohio State. I don't have that number in front of me, but that would be probably $140 or $150 million a year.
Wow.
Athletics department budget. So they're spending a lot, but they're generating enough revenue,
mm-hmm,
to cover their costs. Even in the Big Ten, half of the Big Ten schools' athletics departments can't generate enough revenue to cover their costs. At places like Indiana, for example, they just don't have enough. They don't have enough ticket sales. They don't have enough other revenue options to make up their costs. And football, as you said to start off the conversation, football is the most expensive program, so it's the one that gets the most attention.
Certainly, yeah, and that's certainly a stark contrast in comparison to some of those middle of the road schools right now, Ronald. How much annually do students here at Michigan State contribute to the athletic department through their tuition? Curious.
Through tuition, none.
And that's
unusual, because as I say, in most schools, the athletics department is subsidized somehow,
right,
by the university. It may be tuition dollars. It may be state government dollars. Some schools have specific athletic fees. So in addition to tuition, students pay a fee that goes to fund part of the athletics program. At places like Michigan State or the University of Michigan, that doesn't happen because the athletics department is large enough and successful enough to generate enough revenue to fund its costs in most years. But so here, now students do support the athletics program. They buy tickets, for example.
Right.
They go to events, but not they're not using tuition dollars or fees. Athletic fees to fund the program.
So it's pretty self-sustaining. It is self-sustaining at a university like Michigan State.
In most years at a place like M. But, you know, another thing that people don't sometimes understand about universities is there are other programs at the universities that don't cover their costs. Some programs, some academic programs at the university cover costs, and some don't, and they have to get subsidized because the university believes it's valuable to have that program. And so you have the same issue in other parts of universities that you have with athletics. And here at Michigan State, for example, you know, something that's a real favorite of mine, the Spartan Marching Band. I love the Spartan Marching Band. My grandson loves the Spartan Marching Band. The Spartan Marching Band does not cover its costs. It has to be subsidized. As people understand, some people don't know, it is a class. Students do pay tuition to be in the Spartan Marching Band, but that isn't enough to cover its costs. It's paid for by the university. But it's valuable. It's a great thing to have. People like to watch it. It brings great you know, recognition to the university. I don't think anybody is in favor of getting rid of the Spartan Marching Band just because it doesn't fully cover its costs.
Interesting. I did not know that. Again, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Ronald Fisher, Michigan State professor in the Department of Economics, and he also teaches a course entitled The Social Science of Sports. Now, Ronald, I want to ask the question as it pertains to Eastern Michigan University then. Those students, do they contribute to the athletic department through their tuition?
Yes. In some way, because the athletics department doesn't cover its costs, the university has to come up with other funds. And, you know, what are the sources of other funds for the university? It's tuition dollars, it's donations, it's support from the state government. Now, all that money goes to Eastern Michigan University. It goes into one pot, and then the university allocates it. But some of that money, whether it comes from student tuition dollars or it comes from donations or it comes from state government support to the university, some of that money gets allocated to support the athletics department.
And absolutely. I think that's exactly what the HBO piece, the Real Sports piece, kind of profile when they were diving into what's happening at Eastern Michigan University. And what really, really got me about that story, Ronald, was when they interviewed some of the students and let them know that, yes, some of your tuition is going to athletics. The students had no idea. That's pretty surprising, isn't it?
Well, you know, you pay your tuition, as I say, it funds the whole overall university, all the different activities in the university. I guess to me, it's not surprising that students don't know exactly where every one of the dollars is going.
Right.
But
right.
But I think you're right. People sometimes think that all those, you know, you see games on television, you see the people in the stadium that think athletics must be generating this huge amount of money. And that's really a misperception.
Was this the right move for EMU to cut these four sports? And how long do you think it will take EMU to kind of dig out of this hole, if you will?
Well, I think every university has to make that individual choice. Cutting sports is one option. As you know, Michigan State did that a few years back. Other universities have done that. The number of sports that different universities offer is not at all equal. Some universities offer many more sports than others. There are other options, though. So, you know, there are different levels of competition in the NCAA. So some schools have chosen to stay in Division I, but move football from the bowl subdivision to the championship subdivision, and that reduces costs because there are fewer scholarships allowed if you play football at the championship subdivision. So, example, we don't have schools in Michigan like that, but here in the Midwest, Youngstown State or Dayton, for example, are Division I schools, but play football at the championship subdivision level or have lower costs. Dayton has has had a successful athletics program. That's what the Ivy League schools do. So Penn is in the NCAA basketball tournament this year. Mm-hmm. They're a Division I program in basketball, but they play football at the championship subdivision. Or there are some schools that stay in Division I for all the sports but don't have football. And probably the best example of that here in Michigan is Oakland University.
Right.
Oakland has had a very successful basketball program over the years. They've had very successful soccer programs. They play in Division One, but they don't have a football program at all. So there are other options that schools have besides eliminating sports to try to reduce costs or control costs.
Ronald Fisher, Michigan State professor in the Department of Economics, also teaches a course here at MSU entitled Social Science of Sports. Ronald, final question for you, because I'm interested to get your take on this. It's been a debated topic for years now as it pertains to college athletes possibly getting paid in the near future. I feel like this conversation has been ramped up even more so, seeing as though what's taking place in the world of college basketball and this whole FBI investigation and certain athletes receiving improper benefits and the conversation centered on, okay, if we just pay these athletes, maybe this will eliminate this problem and this controversy. Where do you fall? Which side of the fence do you fall when it comes to college athletes getting paid?
The big question, the tough question. I think most economists think that relatively more of the resources that are generated by big-time college athletics programs should go somehow to support student-athletes. And whether that means paying them directly, I'm not so sure that is an easy thing to do mm-hmm. because of the differences between sports, because of the differences between athletes in a given sport. Some have real pro potential and some do not. Because of the restrictions of Title IX, directly paying athletes is a difficult road to go. But there are things that could be done to give more of the resources to the sports support student athletes. The Power Five conferences have done that now, funding full cost of attendance. There are proposals out there to allow student athletes to generate revenue from their images and their names and their likenesses. And whether that money goes to them immediately or it gets put in a escrow account that they get when they leave, there are ways of funding, using more resources to fund a travel for student athletes that hasn't happened in the past. There are all kinds of things I think that could be done short of maybe paying a direct salary to student athletes, but still getting them more support out of the programs out of the revenue that's generated so far. And so I sort of, thinking about all the aspects of it, it's the big question. That would be my short and quick answer.
Ronald Fisher, Michigan State professor in the Department of Economics, teaches social science of sports. Ronald, you were absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. We got to get you back on one of these days.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Good luck with your bracket tonight. Mine was destroyed a long time ago.
I think most of the nation's was, Ronald, so you're in the same boat as all of us.
All right, take care.
Ronald Fisher, that was a great interview. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, another great interview coming your way, this time with Ira Childress, Okemos High School Athletic Director. That and more, you are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Just wrapped up segment A as we invited to the show Ronald Fisher, Michigan State professor in the Department of Economics, as he really shined a lot of light into the Eastern Michigan University story as EMU has decided to cut four sports in order to combat this budget deficit they are currently in. And much love to John Simon for setting that interview up with Ronald Fisher. Ronald was actually one of his professors. All right, let's get to our second guest for today's Current Sports. He is my dear friend, my man, 50 grand, Ira Childress, Okemos High School Athletic Director. Ira, what's up?
Hey, Al, what's happening, man? It's another beautiful day in mid-Michigan, and it's good to be here.
Always. Always good chatting with you. And Ira, I think my voice has fully recovered now after the beginning of this week as I was the MC for Meet the Chiefs. I announced the names. And thank you so much for inviting me once again. I get to say that formally on the air now. But I read like 250 names that night. That's a tough job, man. That's a tough job.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's one thing to kind of look at it when you're not doing it and, you know, you're sitting in the audience or you're one of the student athletes. But it's another thing to be sitting in the seat announcing those names, because not only the names, some of the names can be tough to pronounce, but you also have to think about, okay, how's my pace? Am I enunciating these names? Well, I mean, there's a lot to think about. That's why we brought in a great expert like yourself. And, man, you did a great job. Heard a lot of positive feedback on the night from you hosting that event.
Well, thank you so much, Ira. It was my pleasure to do it. And, I had big shoes to fill as Greg Monahan has done a great job holding down the fort, I should say, for you guys. But Ira, let's dive right into it. For continuity purposes, I want to pose this question to you. You know, you just heard some of the conversation that I just had with Michigan State professor in the Department of Economics, Ronald Fisher. And we finished that chat by discussing, or him really elaborating on his point of view when it comes to the topic of should college athletes be paid. Where do you fall on that side of the fence?
Now, Al, you know I worked at the NCAA National Office in Indy.
Right.
So I was close to the situation, obviously, for many years. You know, my take is that there should be some compensation for student athletes at the college level other than their scholarship. Now, what format or what formula you use for that, I think that has to be up to the NCAA and obviously the membership schools. But there needs to be, in my mind, some type of compensation, and whether that's in a form of a stipend, you know, whether that's in a form of, you know, we're going to compensate based upon need, whether that's in the form of, you know what, we're going to give X amount of dollars across the board to all the student athletes. But I do believe in this, or whether that's the Olympic model, mm-hmm. Where they say, hey, you know what, we're not going to compensate you, but we're going to let you benefit off of your likeness. And so that way, if those who can do a commercial or get paid that way can do it as well. So there has to be some tweaking. And I do think if you heard President Emmert's comments a few weeks back, he said there will be major changes in college athletics. And one of the things he kind of hinted to was the Olympic model, which would need to be tweaked a little bit, mm-hmm. but it would allow compensation.
And I actually like that deal a lot. I mean, because, again, the NCAA is already benefiting off the likeness of a lot of these athletes and some of the big names for sure. I mean, and I think they should be compensated as well. I definitely am with you in that conversation. All right, Ira, I want to shift gears and talk about what you've done, the amazing job that you've done and continue to do at Okemos High School. I want to dive into the details of it, though. In order to ensure that Okemos Athletics is competing at a high level in relation to other high schools in the area and the state, for you, Ira, what kind of budget must you have? Because we have been chatting about the whole EMU cutting four sports. I'm curious, at the high school level, to make sure that Okemos Athletics is competing at a high level, what kind of budget do you have to work with?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things, Al, where, and I think any high school athletics director would tell you this, high school athletics is an extension of the classroom. And what we try to do is educational. What we do is educational athletics. So we have approximately 26, 27 sports. So you're looking at a wide-ranging sports across the board, from swimming to water polo to skiing to golf to hockey to football to basketball to tennis to, I haven't come close to naming them all, but all the way across the board, which a lot of schools don't have. So that, you know, that increases things. You know, but, you know, as far as, you know, budget-wise, what we try to do is we try to make sure all of our student athletes are able to compete in their sport and have a great, great experience doing that. And is it expensive? And I don't have, you know, obviously raw numbers here for you, but is it right. expensive? Sure. It's not cheap. And I will tell you that no high school that I know of makes money in athletics. I mean, that's not the goal. We don't have our tickets, to some events are free, but our tickets are only $5. So this is not, Ohio State or Michigan or Michigan State where, you have seat licenses and you're charging all this money for tickets and you have big corporate sponsors and you have, mm-hmm. TV revenue that, Jim Delaney gets for the Big Ten Network and all of that. We don't have that at this level. So this level is really education-based, and you have all these sports to complement outstanding academic programs. So those two things go hand in hand. So, yes, every high school program that I know across the country, this may be breaking news to some, they operate in the red because you don't make money off of high school sports. And you shouldn't, because, that's not the goal. The goal is to give the complete educational experience to the students here at Oklahoma High School. And when you have a student that's able to go out for a track, and let's use track for an example, mm-hmm. we have 100 right now, as 171 participants on our track team. Now think about that. That is so many student athletes are getting an opportunity to run track, to be a part of a team, to learn different things like time management, discipline, teamwork, all the things that they're going to be able to use later on in life. And that's what educational athletics is all about. But on the flip side, to run that, you have to have multiple coaches. You have to, and obviously you need to compensate these coaches for their time. You got to have a nice track, which you got to keep up. There's maintenance fees. So there's a lot of costs associated with all of these sports that go on. But at the same time, schools would never not have sports because it gives you that educational other educational component, just like other extracurricular activities do. The fine arts, band, music, mm-hmm. The art, those things as well. So that's where we try to do. We try to be competitive, and obviously we want to win and all of that.
But of course,
more than anything, I tell my student athletes this all the time. I want you to leave Oklahoma's High School and say, from an athletic standpoint, I had an amazing athletic experience.
That's the main thing.
After safety, number one. But after safety, the student athlete experience is the number one thing.
Certainly, and I'm curious, Ira, are any of the sports that you have at Oklahoma's High School, are they a pay for play system or not?
Yeah, we have a fee. That's $365, mm-hmm. and that's most schools in the area do have does have a fee,
right?
To play. We call it a registration fee. We don't call it pay to play because it doesn't mean if you pay this fee now all of a sudden I'm going to play X amount. It's not that. It's just, hey, here's the registration fee to participate in athletics. And believe it or not, that doesn't cover even half the cost there is of the total cost when you look at all of the athletics out there.
Certainly. Ira, due to time, I got one more question for you. And actually, you and I have talked about this. I want to have you come on at least once a week, and we're going to have a cool segment that we'll be bringing in the next few weeks because I think you can really shine a lot of light behind what goes into athletics. Again, you worked at the NCAA level. I think it'd be really cool to really shine some light on many areas when it comes to high school athletics and also collegiate athletics. But final question for you. I just kind of want you, Ira, to kind of preview your slate of spring sports and those that haven't come out and seen what you guys are doing inside of Oklahoma's athletics. What do you guys have on the table as we wind down the months here of the spring semester?
Yeah, we're excited about spring. When you think about spring for us, it's been really big in the last several years. Our sports have done really, really well, and we're going to kick it off here next week with girls soccer. Our soccer team won the league last year, had a great year, went to the district finals. Darius Ward has done a great job with that program, so we're gonna kick it off there, and then we're gonna play some baseball and softball. Our baseball and softball teams have been really competitive over the last several years, both teams. 2 years ago, both teams won district titles. So, I mean, we've had a lot of success, you know, in baseball and softball. So that'll be going. Water polo's already going. We finished in the top four multiple times in the last 2 years. And a few years back, we won the state championship led by Katie Dudley and that crew. So our girls' water polo is going to be great. And then we talk about boys and girls lacrosse. We've been the leader in this area for several years in boys and girls lacrosse. And I think that won't change this year. My boys' team has got a chance to go a long way and be successful. Our girls' team is one of the premier contenders to win a state championship. We finished in the semifinals last year. We expected to get back there this year and win it. Then you switch over to tennis. We won the league in tennis, I don't know how many years, like 6 or 7 years in a row in girls' tennis. We won five straight regionals in girls' tennis, so our girls' tennis team is very strong. We're looking to, you know, do great things there. And then golf, my boys' golf team, if you're ranking the CAAC blue teams, we'd be right near the top. Our coach expects us to win the CAAC blue title this year in boys' golf. So we're having a great golf. We're going to have a great golf season. So, yeah, across the board, Al, as you can see on track, as we, you know, we already talked about a little bit, our track team won the boys' and girls' league titles last year and won the boys' regional championship last year. So, all of our spring sports are just phenomenal, and we can't wait. We just need Mother Nature to get it like 25 degrees warmer.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
You know? And then we'd be all right. So, yeah, we're excited.
It's an exciting time, and we wish you all the best. And Ira, again, we're going to get Ira week by week with an Ask the AD segment. But Ira Childress, Okemos High School Athletic Director. Ira, thank you so much for your time, my man. Keep up the great work out there.
All right, Al, keep up the great job yourself. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, a new book by former Detroit Free Press sports writer Keith Gave tells the story of how the Detroit Red Wings brought Soviet players to the National Hockey League. Those players helped the team win its first Stanley Cup championship in more than four decades back in 1997. Gave didn't cover just the story at the time. He was an important part of it, having spent 6 years in the U.S. Army as a Russian linguist, eavesdropping on Soviet troops during the Cold War. He helped the team communicate with the players and ultimately defect. WKAR's Scott Pohl talks with Keith Gave about his book, The Russian Five.
So you're a writer at the time for the Detroit Free Press. I want to ask you about the journalistic ethical issues that you faced when the Red Wings approached you and asked you to help in reaching out to these Russian players and get them to America. What kind of issues were you facing?
I knew I was on thin ice, Scott. A few weeks after the Wings drafted Sergei Fedorov, I was invited to lunch by Jim Leitz, the executive vice president of the Wings, and at the time, Mike and Mary Nilich's son-in-law. He was married to Denise, and basically said, we'd like you to do us a favor. And I said, what are you talking about? I can't do you favors. I'm the beat guy with the Free Press covering your team. He said, well, you also speak Russian, and we're willing to pay you a lot of money. And he mentioned six-figure kind of money. It would have been life-changing for a guy on a meager sports writer salary. But, you know, he asked me if I would write a letter to Sergei and Vladimir Konstantinov, who they also drafted that year, and write a letter saying we'd like you to defect. We'll pay you this much money. It was Steve Eiserman kind of money that they were willing to pay them at the time. You know, we'll help you in any way to defect, to come over to Detroit and play hockey. And I said, Jim, there's really no way I can do that. I work for the Free Press. I'd be putting my job on the line. And so he said, okay, enough said. Then that was the end of the conversation. We finished our lunch and left. And, you know, Scott, I thought about it, anguished over it for several days. And I called Leitz back and I said, there might be a way we can do this. And he said, how's that? And I said, I'm not going to take any of your money. I don't want any money at all. But I would do this if you agreed to, when these guys defect and come over to Detroit to play hockey, I want to be the first one for that story to get that story in the Detroit Free Press for my readers of the newspaper. And I want to be the first one to talk with them. I want first dibs on everything related to these guys when they come over. And he said, deal. And so I did it. I went over there. My biggest cloak and dagger assignment, and was able to pass along a message very covertly in a kind of a fake interview with these guys at an arena in Helsinki, Finland, and pass along the message. You know, about 10 months later, I'm set at my table having dinner in suburban Detroit, and my phone rang, and it was Jim Leitz. It said, Keith, and I said, yeah. I said, this is Jim Leitz. Guess who I'm sitting next to? I'm on Mr. Ilitch's plane coming back to Detroit from Portland, Oregon. Guess who's sitting next to me? And I said, who's that? And he said, Sergei Fedorov. So I pushed my plate away. I got my notebook out. I started taking notes, and very, very quickly, because I was on deadline at the time, I wrote a story that was on page one above the fold in the Free Press the next morning. A Russian hockey star coming to Detroit to play for the Red Wings. And so the Wings upheld their end of the bargain. A few days later, I interviewed Sergei, got first crack at that story, and the rest is history. I made a deal. Again, ethically, I was in a precarious position, but I know that beat guys make deals with their sources all the time, whether you're covering politics, sports, education. I don't care what your beat is. You make deals with sources all the time. And I read enough stories, books about, espionage books, even books written by the writers from the New York Times, Washington Post, the AP, who had been over in Moscow for their long assignments, being caught in the middle, passing messages back and forth between, you know, operatives from the CIA and the KGB. That stuff happens quite frequently. I was in the middle of something. I did it, and I have to live with the consequences. Would I do it all over again if I had the chance? I'd think long and hard about it, but I probably would.
You know, I want to point out to listeners that maybe aren't sports fans that your book could still be of interest if they're into cloak and dagger stuff, spy novels, that kind of thing. This is real life cloak and dagger stuff that got these players out of Russia.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, when we talk about this book being a sports book, in some places it's anything but a sports book. When people read about what Igor Arianov and Slava Fetisov did in kicking down the Iron Curtain, standing up to the Soviet Iron Fist that ran the Hockey Federation, that ran the Soviet Red Army Hockey Club at the time, it's pretty remarkable. Each of those guys went public. Igor Arianov wrote a 7,500-word indictment of the Soviet hockey system and the Red Army in particular, and how the players were treated, that was presented in a sports magazine called Agonyok, that led to his exile from the team for a while. And shortly after that.
All right, that's just a little taste, because tomorrow we'll have more of Scott's interview with Keith Gave about the Russian Five. Trust me, you do not want to miss it. It's a compelling interview, as you just heard, on so many levels. But until then, folks, much thanks to Ronald Fisher, Ira Childress, Scott Pohl, and Keith Gave. We'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow to close out this week on WKAR's Current Sports. Be easy, people.